What is happening? Welcome to another episode of The Craft. My name is Nick Pollock, and today's guest, you might never have heard of him, but his voice, oh, let me tell you, it's silky smooth. He knows what he's talking about. He's one of my favorites in the industry, has been for years. Man needs no introduction. It's Eno Saris of The Athletic. Eno, so good to see you. My gosh, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah. It was quite a surprise to hear from you this week.
I'm going to keep this up forever, and I don't care what you tell me.
Yeah, people have asked me, like, they don't get it. Like, it's the whole thing.
Good. That's the idea. I'm doing this for you, Eno. Okay, so right. Now, we of course, every single week on The Craft, we talk about pitching, the state of it, the landscape, things that we're seeing from either just general trends in the game to specific players. And what we normally like to talk about are the guys that get us excited, who are the low end, not the big names. The guys that, oh, whoa, Landon Roop and Tyler McGill. Oh my gosh, and Max Meyer's doing this thing. And Richard Fitz, and what is that? Okay, not today. This is all about the names you already know, but it's not just casual time. It's not just like, all right, put them in, everything's fine, he's great, whatever, uninteresting. No, these are players that either are scaring us from a results perspective in some way, or they're scaring us from the underlying numbers. And you're going to get a range of that SP1, SP2 kind of guy from the names that you know that aren't necessarily as heralded, but they are not looking like the players that we necessarily think we were going to get. So I do want to start at that high end with you, Eno. And who would you say is the highest name, the biggest name player that you are most worried about after the first 2 weeks of the season?
It's probably Zach Gallen. And it sucks because I still believe in some of the things that I said on this here podcast right here, where I said that I'd like him as a pitcher, and I think he's smart, and he may outperform his stuff, quote unquote.
Right.
But I kind of have a rule about stuff. It's not that I sort my pitchers by stuff plus and just pick them in that order.
Well, of course.
I may give off that vibe sometimes, but that is not how I work. But I do have like shelves, you know. Mm-hmm. I have, you know, you kind of, you know, even if you're a location guy, I kind of want you to have 90 stuff plus, you know, 95. I want you to be like near average so that you can make the best out of your average pitches with your command and your sequencing and your smarts.
Right. The Joey Estes threshold.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. He has good command.
Right.
And it was not enough. He is now out of a spot. And I'm afraid that Gallen is approaching that bottom shelf. Right now, we have him at an 82 stuff plus.
Oh, gosh.
And even if you take out the change right now has a 42 stuff plus. And I think they're...
Wait,
you know,
42?
42. It's a really small number. there have been some, you know, sort of alterations to the changeup. It is more sideways than it is, than it was before.
Okay.
And because its velocity has gone up while his fastball has gone down, the gap has gone down between his four seam and the changeup, and so it puts more pressure on his movement. It's in power changeup territory now. It's not a straight changeup. It's only got 6 miles an hour difference off of his fastball, so it has to be a power change. And this power change doesn't move the same way that it used to. And so the model doesn't like it. But let's say it's wrong on that. He's only thrown 11, or he's thrown 49 changeups. It's actually a decent amount. But let's say the model's wrong. Even if the model's wrong, we're looking at a 93 stuff plus on the fastball, 93 on the knuckle curve, 81 on the slider. He does not have a pitch that is above average. And I just worry that there's only so far you can push a arsenal of average-ish pitches if you don't even have one out pitch. I kind of want that one out pitch that's killer. And I wonder if he's missing that, or if it's just the fastball velo's so far down that, you know, he's down in gas too. So it's, the stuff is down is the short story. And I just wonder if he has the ability to make what he usually makes out of his stuff.
So with that changeup, by the way, Zach Gallen's changeup has a 43% strike rate thus far. And that's
Which is also bad.
That is so bad. That cannot be what, you know, what life is for him. And it's also the strike rate on the four seamer is way down to 56%.
Yeah, I mean, for a location guy, he's the only pitch that he's locating that well is the slider. So I mean, I guess the curve. He can locate that curve.
That's the one pushback I have here is that I still feel like that curve is and has always been the pitch for Zach Gallen. I mean, through the years, this is consistently as far as PLV marks go, that obviously takes into location and stuff, but that has always been an exceptional curve. This year so far actually is 97th percentile in PLV at 5.61 and has always been above a five. It's always been a 5.10 plus curveball. You'd love to see it. Average actually for curveballs is right around five.
The stuff we love to see that's that. All coming out of location.
Right. And this is the death ball. This is the actual death ball. And the one thing that I will always say about Gallen is that he knows how to get this thing low. It's always an 80% low lock. When low location on curveballs, like 68% in the majors, he's always one of the best, if not the best in the league, of keeping it down. And it doesn't have that traditional hump. You know, we talked about swinging expectations on curveballs and how curveballs are the lowest one. They're the pitches that we don't really expect to be this big swing miss pitch because guys just kind of see the hump and they don't swing. But Gallen's goes straight down. Right. And it's a different curve than what we typically see. So that's the one thing he's trying to.
And you could look at his heat maps. He's got great command because he can throw the four seam in and in and up and in and out and up and down. And he plays the four seam off the curve. We'll throw some low four seams and some low curve balls.
So
and then,
that's the thing, though. The heat maps used to do that more. And it's been this kind of journey over the past couple of years for Zach Gallen to figure out what to do with his four seamer. Because as you mentioned, his four seamer is getting worse. It is just not as overwhelming as it used to be. He has to be better with its location. He was a called strike fiend with it for a long time. And it's still kind of there, but it's getting hit harder. Its ICR marks have gone up pretty much every single year since 2020. The ideal contact against Zach Gallen's four seamer has gone up from 31 to 40 to 41 to 44 to 47, now 58.
That maps the stuff. It went from 110 stuff plus to now 93.
Right. So to get to that curveball, you have to have a fastball that establishes strikes. And the changeup, slider, cutter really haven't been cutting it for a bit. It's why you actually see that high last year, 126 whip for Gallen, as the walk rate went up while the hit rate stayed the same. And I've been afraid that this would happen. He had that incredible game against the Yankees. Incredible. I mean, it's so weird that we're saying we're afraid of Gallen after that, because it was 6.2 innings of 13 strikeouts. But even then, when I wrote about this, I was like, okay, this is cool. You have 19 inches of vert now all of a sudden on your four-seamer. I don't think that's going to stick around. And what do you know? In his last one against Baltimore, that came down to 16.4. And it was a much worse fastball again. And then we can just kind of see how this doesn't work. And that was such an anomaly of a game. So I remember you saying, hey, Gallen is a veteran. Like, he's the kind of guy that will figure things out and get through the season. He won't just be bad and always be bad. And I'm with you on that one. I'm also saying a 126 whip last year is not such an extreme fluke as I think it would be.
Yeah,
so I'm in agreement
with
you.
It's just not like a... He's not a one or even a two anymore, I think, in fantasy. He's kind of like a 3-4.
Yeah, and there is a grouping to me of these dudes who've been kind of that SP2 for so long for you, who are now fading a bit. And that would be Luis Castillo and Aaron Nola, also in that range. And it's interesting because we're seeing a new wave of all these exciting, massive electricity strikeout guys, and the ones who are able to kind of go six innings are showcasing, wait, hold on, you're getting worse and maybe you're not catching up to the game and how it's being played now. But I'm seeing two ticks down already from Aaron Nola, as it's just not as overwhelming as it has been in the past for him. And Luis Castillo will always just boggle my mind. It is like the worst extension in baseball. He's zero percentile at 5.4. He is extreme now with four seamers upstairs. And then sinkers kind of lowish, I guess, against right-handed batters. Lefties, he's just all day, just like whatever upstairs with them. But the slider and changeup are not as incredible as we have seen in the past. And it just feels to me for both of them, they're just too hittable. And the idea that, that Aaron Nola, he had a 120 whip last year and a 117 before that. And it's just, wait, right, because you allow too many hits. And Luis Castillo has always been this elevated hit per nine guy. He has a 7 right now, but the strikeout rate is down. He's at near 8-9% walk rate. Like, I feel worried about both of those. I think the big name aspect of them is everyone's like, oh no, you just plug them in, it'll be fine. I'll get my volume, I'll get all my strikeouts. Great. But I think we're only going to see, we're like hoping them to hold onto a plateau of success. And especially for guys like this, I don't like holding onto plateau guys. I like going after ones who can theoretically be better than where they are, but I expect them to be at the plateau, not hoping that they hold what they were while there are signs that they could get worse. And I think, Aaron Nola, Castillo, and Gallen are all in that bucket.
Yeah, just the weird thing about, Luis Castillo is that the changeup used to be a real weapon for him, and it's just fallen off. I mean, just every year the stuff is worse, and I guess it's velocity related. The model still like his slider, and he can go to that, but he's not going to it more. Maybe that's the one last old pitcher trick he can do, where he goes to the slider more, like 25-30% of the time, and gets whiffs that way. But Aaron Nola is already pulling an old pitcher trick, which is the cutter.
Right.
And I do think that might make it okay for this season. Mm-hmm. When I start seeing the old pitcher tricks and the old pitcher tricks, I've done correlations. I've looked at like aging curves for pitch types, and like the old pitcher trick is dialing down the fastball and dialing up a cutter, dialing up the slider usage, and just trying to stay away from using the fastball in any predictable manner.
This is why I love the cutter, because I'm becoming an old person. I get it now.
So, I mean, when you see, I don't know how to read necessarily that Nola is already going to it and Castillo may still have one trick left up his sleeve. Mm-hmm. You could read it either way. You could be like, oh, well, Nola has shown the affinity, like the ability to add a pitch. He's added it and he's made a bigger arsenal. It's been a while since Luis Castillo has made a big change to his arsenal other than just throwing the changeup less,
So it's really weird actually to see that from Castillo. It's just like, I don't know, I'm throwing more. I'm just throwing like yesterday's start, Luis Castillo. Sorry, by the way, I know there's Luis F. Castillo. I don't know if you.
Oh, I have a funny story about this. Do you know about this?
I don't. Yeah, what do you got?
The nickname thing.
Yeah.
So Luis Castillo is the stone or the boulder.
Oh yeah, El Pedro, the rock.
Piedro, yeah.
Piedro.
And,
thank you.
So they started calling Luis F. Castillo the pebble.
Is it like in Spanish? The
clubhouse thing.
Oh, that's so funny. What's annoying? I just call him Mr. F. EFF.
El Guijarro.
Oh my God, it's incredible. So I have Luis F. Castillo. I just call him Mr. F.
Yeah.
Right. And which is also, I think that's a reference to like Arrested Development too. Like, is like the bracelet, Mr. F with Charlie's Throne, his character. It's fine. But I didn't have a middle name in our thing for Luis Castillo. It's just Luis Castillo. So I call him Luis Dog Castillo because he's got that dog in him. And that's just that's just what it is now. But D-A-W-G.
I guess, for Gallen, Castillo, and Nola, the difficulty is that we're probably still not telling you to drop them.
Oh, no. I mean, this is tough, right? Gallen might go towards hipster territory. I feel like it's just Holly of like, all right, fine, you do this. But I would say these are sell highs if you can to me.
Well, and you can't yet So, and maybe one right. of those things where you need to wait, and then it'll be so hard. What makes it so hard is that then they have two or three good starts, and you're like, well, maybe they were wrong. Maybe
I know, maybe right? And you have to be so disciplined with this. I mean, you saw the 13 strikeout game though for Gallen.
I mean,
hopefully people can lean in on that one, but that is not what I think you should be expecting from him. There's also a thing to be said about how this is something I see a ton because I do the roundup. And what I see is, well, this is bad, but oh, hold on a second. This is good. And you know what? Maybe I should be more favorable of him because he has this new thing. And maybe when he gets back his old thing, the new thing will be there too. And all of a sudden, he's just a better pitcher. What always happens is they lose the old thing, wait, get the new thing, wait, lose the new thing. Like they never get the old thing back and the new thing added. There's always, it just doesn't happen. So if you start seeing new tricks and like, well, maybe the potential now is higher, as you're saying with kind of Nola, of like, oh, you've got this new thing. Maybe that means he'll have that and get the old one back. Never happens. It's just, I don't know why it just doesn't work that way. So
as simple
there.
As like maybe getting too far around one side of the ball,
right?
The other. Like you're
yeah. So like how
my
cutters
slider's
the
going
Yankees
really good, apparently. And then I start losing the changeup or whatever.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. By the way, I do want to mention, you just reminded me of this, guys. If you haven't seen it, Eno has a great video with Landon Roop doing pitch grips, and it drove me nuts. Absolutely nuts. Well, you know why, Eno, right?
Why?
Well, do you remember what his curveball grip was? It was the Yankee two seam sweeper. I've been calling it a sweeper anyway, but like that's the Yankee two seam sweeper grip. Right, with just like
yeah, that's why. And he was like, "Oh, he was like all nonchalant about it." But I was like, "That's pretty cool." Like,
sweeper grip. Okay, guys, yeah. Like you go on the side of it like this. A curveball has to be at the top of this. Has to be like the four seam grip, just like on the side, as opposed to over the top of it. That's a curveball. This is the sweeper grip. Which, by the way, I still don't understand why people do it like this instead of just going straight in your middle finger, like the Chaz Rowe. Like, why wouldn't you just do that and really emphasize on it and have any way of not doing it? But that's just me. But I was watching that and I was like, oh man. Oh, that's, I was shouting. My fiance is like, what are you yelling about, Nick? Because then we have the office in the same room. And I got to realize that now. But go check out that video. Ian did a really good job talking to Rube about it, showing the grips. I'd love to see that. We're going to talk about the other pitchers that are actually the bigger names. We're going through some stuff. Maybe you shouldn't be worried about them. We're going to talk about those guys after this break. Okay, so Paul Skenes had a terrible game yesterday. So did Zach Wheeler.
Oh my God, you got to drop him. Paul Skenes sucks.
Yeah. Are we actually worried about like maybe a decline here from Skenes? No, right? It was just a 5-run game, guys. Everything's fine. I'm not seeing anything that really is too startling thus far from Paul Skenes that I go, oh my gosh, wait, what's going on? I mean, I will mention the Splinker has a 58% strike rate. It needs to be a little bit more consistent. That's all I would hope for.
It was at the end of last year than it was at the beginning of last year, but you can't really complain about a guy sitting 98. The arm angle is a little bit different, but stuff says it's fine. You know, I would say that from watching that game, it was cold.
Yeah. And that's the thing too. I do want
to,
I
didn't look like he
so
wanted
annoying.
To be there.
Like Garrett Crochet was throwing super slow all of a sudden yesterday with like less extension. And it's like, oh, right. It was like 31 degrees in Fenway. Now, Chris Sale, you were throwing 92.7 and it was mid 50s because it's Atlanta. But your command was really good. And I'm just going to be like, all right, whatever, Chris Sale, I guess. But that's not fun. But I mean, I think we just got to kind of like do a whole blanket, like, the weather is terrible. 91.9 for Eovaldi. It was so cold. And I think it was also raining as well. It was just disgusting for him too. It's just stuff like that. A lot of these this week are scary. But, I mean, Dylan Cease, by the way, 900 runs. Like, we're not scared about Dylan Cease. This is who he is. Right? Are we on the same page there?
Stop throwing that 75-mile-an-hour changeup. Like, what are you doing with that thing, dude? I don't know why he throws that thing.
Oh! Oh man, it's up to
like 10% of the usage. Like, come on,
Eno. Oh, you don't know. I'm laughing for many reasons there. I just think he should throw a cutter for strikes against lefties. That's just me.
Yeah.
That's just me. He threw 6 different pitches. None of them were a cutter.
With each new one, you're like, maybe this one. But Chris Sale...
He threw like 5 of them last year and then abandoned it. But to me, the way I see it is that he was trying to use it. Like, I see a lot of guys, which really bothers me, honestly, is they try and get too perfect with cutters, where they try to go like just up and in exactly. And it's really more so from right-handers to left-handers. I barely see from lefties to righties. Lefties to righties, they get it all the time. You just got to get in the inner third and like, it's fine. Or because just maybe middle or so. Sometimes even back door, it's totally fine. You just get that backdoor cutter, just get a strike in there. And Cease was trying to do it perfectly like that. He threw one that was a home run, I think, to like, it was Ryan McMahon or something. And he's like, I'm done. And that's it. And I'm this is like my guess. I'm just being, you know, I'm figuring this out. But like, that's obviously what happened. Happened to Jameson Taillon too. Brandon Marsh did the same thing for home run. He was done with it. I'm like, guys, these are... No.
But it's a really wrong. It's a really big event when that happens. And we remember big emotional events more. And we put more weight on them. And it's got to be one of the hardest things. I mean, I think that's a source of chaos in pitching development. I mean, I think it's also part of why it's hard to develop pitchers in hitters' parks, is because every mistake they make gets crushed and they can't, you know, if you're in Florida, in Miami, or in San Francisco, or in Seattle, you can take a pitch out for a ride, you know, and make a mistake with it. And it could be hit for a long fly ball that gets caught and you don't feel that badly about it. And you throw it again, you know.
So you know what we need to do, you know? I got it. I figured it out. We need to have at home plate, like where the dirt is on other sides of like the batter's box, little like confetti sprays with like in the back behind it, like a big light thing. That anytime you have a PLV, you throw a PLV pitch like that's successful, you just have it spray out. Ping! Doesn't know what the result is. Just lets the guy know, like, hey, that was a good thing. I don't care what the result is.
But I mean, maybe you could have like a pitch-com alert, you know?
Oh, yeah. It's a therapist in your head. Hey, man, that was all right. That was a really good PLV. It was
fine. Don't worry about it, dude. That was 6 PLV.
Oh gosh! Hey, can you make it my third grade school teacher voice? Absolutely.
Yeah.
But you know, long story short, with Dylan Cease, that changeup is interesting. It makes sense to me because you want like the biggest problems for Dylan Cease. Generally, when you see his volatility, is against left-handers. He's much much better against righties. The slider is such a great weapon to him. Even like the very rare sinker or the new sweeper that he's going for, as if he needed more weapons for it. The four-seamer works better against him. The whole thing is just so much better against righties. And it's always been lefties. Can he locate that slider well enough and he leaks the fastball over the plate more? The curveball isn't really that helpful. So the changeup makes sense. And he's actually thrown some that are not really in good locations, but it floats in there and it looks really nice. 75 is like, whoa, this is like, you know, Estrada-esque, but like the butterfly. But it's still, you know, it's not consistent. And there were times
he's not a good command guy. So he's not throwing it for strikes, you know?
Right. And there's also...
And I would assume that like a straight change works best if you can throw over strikes. I mean, Marco Estrada, one of the things he could do was throw strikes.
Yeah, completely. And really, what really bothered me too was, I think the first game, there was this at-bat that was so dictated that they wanted a fastball. And it was so clear, like, this is the moment that you have this changeup. Like, it's right there. And he threw an up-and-away fastball instead that got laced up the middle for a base hit. And I'm still like a good pitch, and I'm sure the scouting report said like, "Hey, cool, this is what you're supposed to do." And you know, I think it was also against Profar, and Profar at the time like had a bummed wrist, so like maybe fastballs should beat him more so than others. And I get that, but I'm like, he's hunting for this, and you have this thing to do exactly this at this moment, and you didn't do it, and he got a hit, and it's stuff like that so drives me up the wall.
Yeah.
But the thing is, he's going to allow 9 runs and he's going to have like eight strikeout, 0 walk game the next time. And just like, all right, this is the life I decide. I mean, him and Snell, they're doing exactly what I was terrified of. Like,
and I think at their heart, they're two-pitch pitchers. And this is what happens with two-pitch pitchers. Like sometimes everyone guesses right or they lose a pitch, right? They're like, oh, I can't command my slider today. Now I'm screwed.
Yeah. He's a six pitch pitcher. Thank you so much.
I know, but I don't know if I
believe. No. That was a sarcastic voice. Absolutely. Yeah. He's a two pitch pitcher. 100%.
Cutter could be something that he needs another one he can trust is basically it. And another one he can trust against lefties, because your example shows he doesn't really trust the changeup against lefties.
Right.
Get back to Chris Sale real quick, though, because Chris Sale is a two-pitch pitcher often.
He can be, yeah. Sometimes the changeup just disappears on Chris Sale.
And he's on this not-so-great list to be on.
Uh-oh, what do we got here?
The biggest losers in velo, four-seam velo among starting pitchers this year. The biggest is Martin Perez, but nobody really noticed.
I did. I just laughed about it.
Yeah, right. Nobody really cared, I guess I should say. Osvaldo Bidot, I cared.
Whoa, really?
Yeah, it's not great. He's actually below average stuff plus.
I think his second game was in the snow, though.
Yes, that's true. So I'll give him a little bit of grace on that. Walker Buehler.
Yeah, this is so terrifying.
Terrifying. He's down to 93.3. That is not good.
This about that really quickly. If you guys remember, I actually had Walker Buehler around like the late 50s in my list entering the season. And I can imagine some people being very irate, being like, Buehler's terrible, Nick. How could you do this? However, I put Buehler there for this exact reason, that we would know the opening weekend if Buehler was good or not. Yeah. And so the league I had Buehler, I cut him the second I saw the data on that first start. I was like, I'm done, and was able to go and get Chris Bubich that went later. Right. Yeah, and like, that's definitely the exact purpose of that ranking. So if you guys needed to wait another week, I understand. I have zero confidence in Walker Buehler. He also just looks so lost still. I'm like, what is he doing? He doesn't have the approach that's like, oh, cool, I know I'm going to do this time and this time. No. Walker Buehler is not it. Please.
I think there's also just I just had him highlighted as droppable. I think in most leagues, even in 15 team leagues, he's like a streamer at this point, and he'd have to do something to be a good streamer. Basically, he'd have to show you something. Nathan Eovaldi is next with -2. Nathan Eovaldi, I think, is just an amazing story of somebody who started as an all fastball, 99 mile an hour straight fastball that. Probably if we had stuff plus going back to that, we'd find out that despite the high velo was not a good shape. And he always used to get his fastball beaten in. And then he just went on this journey where he just added pitch after pitch after pitch. And now is like a wide arsenal.
Yeah.
Command guy.
It's great.
I mean, that's how it should be.
Right. You're spending all this time perfecting a craft. Like, you should eventually.
I think he's fascinating. And so, I mean, I am worried that he's from 95 to 93, but I did not have him that high to begin with. And his results are fine. And he is kind of a wider arsenal guy than you might expect if you look at the numbers. And so I think Eovaldi is still one of those guys where I might be careful about certain starts. I wouldn't start him against the Dodgers or whatever, you know. I'm not dropping him based on this -2.
No, and that's also because of the weather. Absolutely. It was at 91.9, right? And that was a disgusting game. And I think he's still really about 94. So I'm not worried
about
that.
Still down, but not the full two.
Right.
Randy Vasquez is on here. Randy Vasquez had a start in Colorado too.
Yeah.
When it was snowing.
You know, I have a phrase, by the way, for that 99 that is not good shape. I just call it empty velocity.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly what he had. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I wrote a piece once, there's no fastball too big to hide. And it was about Nate Eovaldi. Jordan Romano's on here just for you reliever heads. You know, I think that's really bad news. Then Carlos Rodon is on here. But I wrote today about how I am still hopeful about Rodon because he's throwing the change, but he doesn't command it super well. His curve looks pretty good. He's brought the sinker back in. I think he's on a similar path as Eovaldi, where he's adding the pitches in. He doesn't maybe have the same command as Eovaldi, so it's a little bit dicier, and that's why you'll have bad games for Rondon. And so he will be a headache to own, but I'm still in on him. I think
Just to monitor that a little closer, 95 in the first game against Milwaukee, which is like, hey, that's what we're aiming for. And then 93.1 against Arizona in New York. And then it was literally flurrying and snowing on screen a ton at Detroit on Monday. And both those games were 93. So, I mean, I
know it's so weird to do undershirts, this.
So. It's just so difficult. Yeah, right. It's so difficult to gauge velocity when it's like that kind of weather. And I actually, quick side note, you know, I don't know if you saw, there was a discussion going around about Tommy Pham wearing a batting glove on his right hand in the field, right? I don't know if you've seen that before.
I've seen it from little leaguers.
Well, right. And, well, I mean, here's the thing though. I played in the Northeast, right?
And you see it more often there probably.
And boy, we played games in like the end of February, early March, and it was so cold. And I absolutely saw outfielders do this. Now keep in mind, like we don't see in the majors at all because generally teams are prepared for this and guys are ready and they have their warmers. They have all the things.
They play a little bit later. They don't play in February.
Right. So they're not, but this was a case where I'm pretty sure like Pham either, either my hand's going to be a complete brick where I can't like grip it. I don't know what to do with it. Or I'm going to put this glove on so I have some semblance of, you know, maybe just slightly warmer that I can move my fingers to do this. And I totally get that. It makes sense because I saw guys actually do that in college. The back pocket of your pants is not enough, guys. Let me tell you. Oh, man. So didn't know if you had any, if you saw that around and everything, but it's the weather's been so weird and it stinks and it messes up with a lot of these early things.
Yeah, but I do think, you know, a few of these, especially here at the end of the top 10, are meaningful in that Bowden Francis plays in a dome. And is down 1.6 and he's down 1.6 off of what wasn't great velo to begin with.
Yeah.
And so I'm getting some, for good and bad. I'm not fully, I am going to say something mean about him later, but, I'm not fully anti Bailey Ober types, but I get a bit of a Bailey Ober, vibe from Bowden Francis. Big curveball.
Oh, that's interesting.
Big splitter, good shape fastball, but bad velo, decent command. So Bowden Francis' numbers look pretty good. I don't believe in them fully. Chris Bassett's numbers look great, but he is down to 91 and someday will be throwing in the 80s and I will still be out on him. Justin Steele down a full tick and a half and he's hurt. And then there's Chris Dale down a tick and a half. And then Nick Pivetta, who I wanted to highlight a little bit because Nick Pivetta, it's so weird. He was a high stuff, high velo guy, getting lots of strikeouts in a tough park and never getting the ERA that you thought he would. And then he leaves that park, he loses the velo, he loses the stuff, he loses all the strikeouts, and he has, you know, two great starts. I think that Nick Pivetta, I wouldn't go droppable. Walker Buehler is droppable. Nick Pivetta is ride him, I guess, while this is working. But any sign of failure or any ability to trade him, I would.
Yeah. I mean, with Pivetta, by the way, it was a little bit worse against the Cubs this past one. And I think we're both kind of on the same page of a guy that has literally never had an ERA under 4. I think I mentioned this to you. I put out a tweet being like, hey, guys, I'm listing starting pitchers who have been a starter and only started for at least 8 years and who have never had a season ERA of under 4. I'll start Nick Pivetta. And I expect people to just like give me other answers. There's literally no other answer. Yeah. Like he's the only one that started every year and is still starting with an ERA that's never been better than 4, which is bonkers. But yeah, Pivetta, I mean, I think Pivetta should increase in the velocity. It's really hard to really to really understand like, hey, is someone still ramping up just even a little bit? Is it the cold? Is it something that has changed that is preventing this anymore? I don't know. But I'm always going to really treat Pivetta like a hipster. Like he's going to drive you up the wall. You're going to have those games. Like, yeah, the first one with a lot of strikeouts and then the second one is like, oh, cool. I'm just going to be throwing more of the plate, and this isn't very good now. And the Cubs got me. Ha ha. It can be very, very frustrating. And Actually, I think someone else is like that.
Too, and good offenses actually inspire worse pitching.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Because
not on your side, the guys you're going against, right?
Yeah, they make you nibble more. They make you
lose your confidence. That's all it is.
Yeah, make you throw worse pitches because you can't give them their fastball or whatever. Yeah, so
right.
There's a confidence issue there. So maybe he'll have the best season of his career. And he's obviously in that weird spot where you know, you're not necessarily dropping him, or if he's out there, I guess I wouldn't pick him. Maybe I wouldn't pick him up. I think he's a streamer-ish. Mm-hmm. He's like a kind of a team streamer, as Paul Spohr calls it, where he stays on your bench when you don't want to pitch him. But he's in that sort of weird spot where I was like, I don't believe in it so much.
Yeah. In the same kind of way, it's also based on the team context for me, is Yusei Kikuchi, who I came into the year being like, okay, I think I figured it out. I'm going four seamer slider. We talked about him a lot in First Pitch Arizona. I remember me and Eric Samolsky up there showcasing our respective top 100 SP lists. This is back in like the first week of November. And I had Kikuchi around like 50, which I think the market was saying like 35 or something along those lines. And I got so many people being like, what's wrong with you? Why do you hate Yusei Kikuchi? All this stuff. I'm like, I think he signed really early with Los Angeles, by the way, right? It was like instantly. That Kikuchi is a very volatile as it is, just with, hey, do I have my changeup? Do I have my slider? Or do I do this with my fastball? What's going on? But then adding in the fact that he's on the Angels, where I do not trust that they're going to help him figure things out. As well as maybe any other club or many other clubs, that's not fun. And we're seeing a dip in velocity to 94 and change. We're seeing a slider that just isn't as incredible as we've seen in the past. And it's just the overall look of him is not a guy that is dominant. And I don't really think that it's all of a sudden just going to click and he's going to be incredible moving forward. Do you see the same stuff, you know?
Yeah, he's weirdly gone. He's regressed in terms of he's now a two-pitch pitcher when he was kind of trying to push being more of a four-pitch pitcher last year. I mean, last year he threw the changeup, slider, and curveball. And force. He threw each of them at least 300 times.
Mm-hmm.
And he's definitely not on pace to do anything like that this year. And he's, you know, sort of devolved into, what is this now, 50% fastball, 40% fastball, and like 36% slider. So
yeah, that's what he did in the second half last year, because the changeup finally got like pushed away because he tried so hard.
He was at least using the curve more.
Yeah, and then the curve was there, and then I think we went to Houston. They're like, let's just stop throwing the curve, and I was like, wait, don't actually do that though, because the curve kind of helps. It's like that extra little bridge thing going on, and. So I kind of think that three pitches really the way to go, but the worst fastball is a big issue. It's just right there, then and there, it's like, well, that needs to be the dominating one, and the slider underneath, and that really needs to be the game plan. And to see that kind of not working well against not.
And then, and then the slider is also worse.
Yeah.
You know, because the slider went from 88 miles an hour with 3-3 break. To 87 miles an hour with 6-1 break. So it's not even the same pitch anymore. Like it's a little bit more, it's more cutterish, you know.
Yeah.
It's getting 3 inches less drop, and an inch less horizontal break, and it's a mile per hour slower.
That's just so weird.
Fundamentally worse pitch that he's throwing more often.
Is this what happens when you go to the Angels?
I just think, what did you guys tell him to do this with a slider, or is this just something that happens with, you know, happened with age, or
I don't know,
a year off? But now I can't imagine. I know they're in first place, but I can't imagine.
Really?
He's, yeah.
Are they waving their arms so much?
I guess maybe do the Rangers win today or something?
Well, I mean, they played against the White Sox, and then
they're
seven and three. They played. They played against the White Sox, and then they've had a generally easy schedule.
I just don't think that. My point was, I don't think that Kikuchi is going to be a big source of wins. He doesn't even.
Yeah, and I'm with you in that regard completely. I mean, they just faced the Cardinals also, which is, again, not it. He's 0-2 right now. Or actually 0-1, Kikuchi, after two starts thus far. We'll be going, I believe, later today. We're recording this in midday Wednesday. I don't have high hopes for Kikuchi. I'm not saying that he can't be valuable. I think there will be a stretch where he's looking great and you're going to love him, but he's going to be this undulation of success and failure. That's
like almost everybody we've talked today. I think the big lesson that I would want anybody to take away from this, if there is a top end lesson, is that everybody we talked about today is suddenly much more schedule dependent than they were in the past.
Now,
even somebody like a Nola or all these guys, I would be, and the hard part about it early in the season is, you know, for example, like, so you want to gauge strength, and so you say, oh, do I start Aaron Nola in Atlanta? And you kind of look at something where you look at 2025 batting by team, and you're like, well, Atlanta is the 23rd best team by WRC+. I should start him. Maybe. Is that Atlanta's true talent through 10 games?
Right.
We know what they are. And so,
we don't do that actually with our rankings. It's our offense ranks. We're not doing it until like 14 days at least.
It's like projected rank or something.
Yeah. That's how we do our projections, and we're taking whatever offensive strength we're taking to pitchers. We're assigning that as like an overall team. And we're not really changing it from the preseason until 14 days.
Okay, there you go. You know, and then even then, when you do, you're probably taking preseason projections and adding 20% of, you know,
right,
season whatever, you know.
Yeah, we are going to be doing Process Plus actually, and before too long, I've just taken the Process Plus of the year because we know it stabilizes around then, or at least if we get like something that we can actually say, cool, that's where they are. And then take it from there.
If they're going up against a great Process Plus team, maybe that's the one to avoid, you know?
Exactly. We have one guy that I know everyone's really curious about. I've certainly showcased it on the list, and I want to know your take on him. And that man is Corbin Burns, and we're going to talk about him after this break. So I've referenced this a ton, but I remember so much sitting in that bar with you, pointing at the screen, being like, look at the vert. It dropped on Corbin Burns' gutter. It used to be at like 12, 13 inches, and now it's at 7. He's back. And guess what? Corbin Burns is at 13 inches of vert on his cutter right now. It's terrifying. It's terrifying. And he's doing that with a lower strike rate as well on that cutter. And I do think that Burns will figure something out where he's not just going like 65% cutters that don't get enough strikes. But this is not an ace anymore. This is like the transition from a stud to, cool, use your SP2-3 that I'm seeing with Corbin Burns.
Yeah. I mean, when we were worried about his cutter, it was 13s and 14s early on. And then in the last month, he got it down to, you know, 10.5 and 8.7 in the last 2 months last year. And right now it's 11.6. So it's not as bad as it was to begin last year necessarily, but it's not necessarily where he was in 2022 when he was kind of tens and nines. In 2021, it was tens and nines, you know?
Yeah.
So it's not on the better range of his outcomes. And then on top of that, Corbin Burns, who I've discovered doesn't throw much in the offseason.
What?
Yes, I believe. And not much between starts. He's more of a, like, you know, save my bullets kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
His cutter is down from 95.3 to 93.8.
Yeah.
And I don't even know that that compares all that bad, that well to beginning of last year. There was, you know, some velo issues when he started, but he was still 95 to begin last year. He did get back up to 96s, you know, in August, before ending the season at 94. So I just feel like he's going to throw a little bit harder. He's maybe going to improve the depth on the cutter a little bit, but my prediction that he would get back to 26% strikeout rate does not seem like it's going to come to fruition. And he actually does seem reduced.
It's he threw 30 secondaries, actually 30 non-cutters is what I should say, including four sinkers, in that last start against the Nationals, and he had three whiffs. That's on curveball, sliders, and changeups and sinkers.
Jesus.
Yeah, that's not fun.
I mean, is that because they're just not honoring the cutter as much?
I mean, the cutter had five whiffs over 59. But I mean, that was a 58% strike rate, though.
And I've got I've got a 61 location plus on him. So he definitely had some troubles commanding.
Yeah. No, I mean, there are a lot of waste pitches. And actually, one of the things that we're adding at some point this year is non-competitive pitches. And I think, by the way, you know, I'm going to tell you right now, if we do some analysis on just waste pitches, the percentage and when they're thrown, like how many people throw waste pitches in 0-2 counts that are just not competitive, how many people throw them earlier in counts, you will find all the efficient and inefficient pitchers. You will I'm so certain about this, about we can define command in many ways just based on just waste versus non-waste. And I know that there's a difference between control and command inside the zone, which is totally fine. And I think that's another little element of nuance. But inefficiency versus efficient is such a big distinction for us with those like six inning volume guys that we haven't really been able to articulate why. You know, why is it that Eflin, before he got this slide injury or whatever, can always go like six innings? Be like, no, he has that ability to do that. Or like Chris Bassett or many others like that, like Ben Lively, maybe even, right? But why can't like these really good, oh my gosh, stuff guys, they're always like flaming out after five innings or something, because they throw these waste pitches all the time. Hayden Birdsong was doing that, right?
Yeah. And to be able to articulate. Waste pitch. I mean, waste pitch is so aptly named. It's like it doesn't forward the conversation in any way, you know?
Right.
You're not setting anything up. Like you can't, even if you throw a ball that's above the zone but close enough to the top of the zone, you can change eye levels, right?
Right.
But I think if you throw, I would love to hear a hitter's perspective on this, but like I think if you throw a ball that's like a foot above the strike zone, you ain't changing anything. Like,
right,
that person saw that pitch out of your hand and wasn't ever going to offer at it.
So I actually argue it changes something, and it's better for the hitter. If you see, if you're a batter
I can almost eliminate the high pitch. You can't even land that.
If you see an early like 1-0 splitter that is so bad, and you remember, and then you're not going to get it next time. You're probably not going to get it again right after. And if he throws another one that's also really bad, it's like completely eliminated, right?
Yeah.
And what I'm really excited about this is I want to do some stuff about data, but like after they throw a waste pitch, what is the percentage of the next pitch being the same pitch?
Yeah.
I'm imagining it's going to be a lower chance of that next pitch being that same pitch.
And maybe rest of a bat too.
And rest of a bat. But then I want to see what is the damage of strike pitches on the next pitch after a waste pitch.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, there's so many things about this that say, to me is, it just showcases like the narrative of that bat and how a pitcher gets their outs. It's why Christopher Sanchez is really good. He doesn't have many waste pitches. Mm-hmm. Like he really just is always competitive and around. You have to be like right in there. And this is why he's one of the more efficient pitchers in baseball. You know, Zach Wheeler isn't like a giant waste pitch guy. You know, he's always going to do that. So
he's got great command for a power pitcher.
And it's how we can define those top 10 pitchers. And like Garrett Crochet to me last year was so impressive because he just didn't waste four seamers and cutters. Mm-hmm. But I watched some Cole Reagans, guys. Trust me, I know, right? Crazy. I watch Cole Reagans. He throws some waste pitches at times. I'm just like, ugh, like it's frustrating because you're so good and like, oh, this is a wasted one and that and so on and so forth. And we've seen him have this higher whip than we kind of want. And I think it's because he creates some counts he doesn't like. He's not getting into that seven inning start as much as possible because of it. It's a real element to combat stuff. Like, and I would even say, you know, I'm going to throw this at you. High stuff guys with low waste percentage, not even location plus, just high stuff and limiting waste percentage. Those I'm sure are like the best pitchers in the game.
That might be. And another thing I think about when you talk about Cole Reagans or, you know, these different pitchers that we're talking about, like it definitely like type number of pitchers you have in your arsenal matters too. Right? It's like Cole Reagans actually has a pretty decently wide arsenal. So if he spikes the curve or something, right? Or the changeup, or he wastes the changeup, he still probably has two or three weapons he can go to.
But absolutely.
Like if Dylan Cease just spiked two sliders on you.
Yeah.
You know, like, and you're like, and the changeup goes 77, you know, if you're a lefty, he spikes two sliders and the changeup goes 77. I can see the changeup, right?
Right.
Then you are anticipating hard in the zone and you are all over it.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So I see this with Corbin Burns to bring us all back, and I see all these wasted cutters around.
And he's kind of cutter curve slider.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, that slider, by the way, used to be like the whiff pitch. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is always 25% to 30% swing strike. And like, he's gotten one whiff on 13 thrown so far.
It is a massive downturn in stuff plus for Corbin Burns. I mean, he just, this is a guy that even last year when we were saying, you know, he's toast or whatever, had a 114 stuff plus. And that was an easy way for me to point at the numbers and say, no, he's still got it. This year it's a 102 stuff plus, but it's just barely above average. The cutter is 100, you know.
Oh man.
And the slider that you're talking about, the slider used to be in the 130s every year. It's 110.
Mm.
And 110 is like, ooh, just barely above average for a slider.
Now, was this the same way last year? It wasn't, right? Corbin Burns had this incredible 11K game, I think, against the Angels in his first start for the Orioles. You said like he doesn't throw in the offseason.
I've got stuff plus game logs here.
I'm just thinking like, hey, is this something where Corbin Burns just needs to ramp up because he doesn't throw enough in the offseason? But right, last year in 2024, really. That first game was 11 Ks and six innings against the Angels.
115 stuff plus in his first game, 109 mm-hmm. in the second, 112 in the third. So at this point last year, he had a 110 plus the stuff right. plus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not encouraging. Of course, we think he's going to be fine to be in fantasy. It's not like you won't want to start him. It's just understand that he's not that top five arm, well, this is top 10. Yeah.
This is what I wanted to do. Okay. We're going to play the start him or don't start him game.
Oh, I love it.
Let's do this for the biggest names so we can get a sense of like how careful we do be.
Yeah, yeah.
Corbin Burns, Saturday, April 12th, Milwaukee.
Yep.
At home.
In Arizona.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm doing it.
Milwaukee at home in Arizona. Yeah. Corbin Burns at home against Milwaukee. I'm starting him.
Yep. Absolutely.
At Chicago Cubs the next Friday.
I'm doing it.
Cubs? Yeah. Cubs have been a really good offense.
I know. I think that Burns is still in that level of like, I think you got to just do it, you know?
Okay. So then Aaron Nola at St. Louis. We're starting him.
Oh, yeah.
And Aaron Nola home against San Francisco. My prediction is probably by this time next week or next Thursday, Aaron Nola's numbers are back to normal.
Yeah, we'll know if the velocity is cool or not.
Yeah. Yeah. Who are some other names that were?
We had like Yusei Kikuchi. That's a fun one.
And Luis Castillo and him are in the same division. So Luis Castillo, next start at Cincinnati.
Is Cincinnati terrifying though? Didn't they have like a 35 inning scoreless streak?
They just lost Matt McClain and
Spencer Steer's not looking that great.
It's a tough park though. I don't love that park.
I mean, I don't like Kikuchi either. But I think it's a probable start for me. I have Castillo, you guys know this, and actually, by the way, I already have this done. My sit start grid, I do it every day now.
Yeah.
For at least the next week.
I wanted to do it also for my own education.
So for PL Pro, you get it.
My answers would be.
Yeah.
Kikuchi at Tampa today. I did start him. I have him in a couple of leagues. I started him at that one. And then Kikuchi at Texas, I think. Yeah.
That's a tougher one.
Yeah, Texas is a pretty good lineup.
Yeah, I mean, Pivetta also as well. That's the last one we'll do here. And then
be a two-start pitcher that week. So if you're in a weekly league, mm-hmm. you're probably taking a chance on that.
Yeah. Pivetta gets Rocky Road next, which you're going to do on Friday. And mm-hmm. then you get hosting the Cubs next Wednesday. I don't think I go for that one.
That's a landmine for me right there.
Yeah. I mean, that there you go, guys. That's the good understanding, I think, of where we are with this. And again, if you guys want to know just my thoughts on sit start, obviously I have my daily streaming article, but something we have this year is every single morning I'm taking all the pitchers for the next, I think, like 2 weeks, really, and then putting them into my sit start buckets of auto start, probable start, questionable start, do not start. So you can just see it in advance of where I'm at, and make those decisions quickly. But Eno, thank you so much for joining me again. It's such a such a pleasure every single time. And do you have any other articles that you're putting out soon?
Ooh, I had the kick change up article, article up last week. This week I have four pitchers with above average stuff and bad results. And so I looked into Jackson Jobe and Tanner Houck. And
oh, gosh. Oh, there's Carlos a big Rodon name. And I've moved on from Tanner Houck. Oh, gosh, no.
And that was kind of my conclusion, because his above average stuff is inflated by great stuff numbers right on right. And we have those platoon splits. He does not have a single pitch that rates above average versus left-handers.
Oh, man, not even the splitter, guys.
Yeah, not even the splitters. I think they've figured something out about the splitter. Maybe they just see it low and let it go.
Or maybe it's just volatile.
Yeah, maybe he doesn't command it that well. He is missing something against lefties. And if you look at his history against lefties, last year was the only year where he was any good against them.
Yeah, right.
And so
that splitter was really good in the first half for Houck. He also lost like 3 to 4 inches of bend on the slider this year, mm-hmm. which is just, oh gosh, that's like the thing for Tanner Houck.
My diagnosis, I saw that you had a piece about Jobe up. I haven't had a chance to read it. Was it you that wrote it or somebody else?
I did not write it. Trust that it might have been Nate Schwartz. If it's not Nate Schwartz, I'm really sorry to the writer who did. But
I just I diagnosed him as maybe overthrowing, because he's within 2 miles an hour of his maximum. And if you look at his heat charts, his heat maps for his fastball, like, it's a lot of middle. And so I'm saying, you know, the hardest part is you're telling somebody who's trying to make it. He's trying to prove that he belongs here. I would love him to have 2 or 3 good innings in a row.
Just, oh man, you got to read this article.
Out of luck. This is from to have 2 or 3 good innings out of luck, and then calm down.
Yeah.
And I also was like, I think maybe don't throw the curve and the sweeper as much, and try to really hone in on fastball, cutter, change, and just throw those.
Sure.
So something about a little bit about simplifying, finding some success and breathing. It was not my normal article where I can be like, he needs to do exactly this, because I still like all the numbers are pretty much through the roof that they say that he could just throw fastball, cutter, and have success, but we know that's not how starting pitching works. So he does need to have an arsenal that he finds. He needs to maybe we talked about finding your identity. He needs to find something that works, settle down, and then he can add back these other pitches that he's been throwing. Like, I would say slim it down, get some outs, and then start adding the other pitches back.
So sorry to interrupt you before. Jack Foley put this one out. Jack Foley's been a going deep writer with us for a long time. You got to read the stuff that Jack puts out. And he has a really good showcase of, first of all, the new cutter from Jackson Jobe that has more depth and more bend to it. But it's slightly slower, and the arm angle changes. It's a lower arm angle on that cutter. It's a slider. It's lower arm angle for the four seamer.
Telegraphing the pitch.
It's a higher arm angle for the changeup. And the curveball versus the sweeper, it's a much higher arm angle. So 49 degrees on the curveball versus like 42 on the sinker, 47 on the four seamer, 42 on the cutter. And that might be part of it too, that the cutter and the four seamer are not coming out of the same angle.
That was a problem for Bryce Miller.
And
there are some slight similarities here where it's like really great fastball, but what do you got to put it together in arsenal around.
Yeah, that's a really good call there. And so definitely read this. Also, Jack Foley says he's always hated the phrase he's a throw and not a pitcher, because it feels disingenuous and gives too much credit to pitchers perceived to have, quote, excellent command, when in reality it's just that they're missing less often and less badly. And I'm like, you're not wrong, but there's a difference between Matt
Jackson
Brash
Jobe's a thrower, not a pitcher,
and Zach Eflin.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So just that's what we're getting at here.
But I do recommend anybody who listens. We on Rates and Barrels are going to do a thing about arm angles with Trevor May tomorrow. Now that you brought them up,
oh sweet,
and maybe we'll reprise that with you next week if it makes sense. If there's more,
oh completely, that sounds great.
Eat off the bone there.
So definitely go listen to that one. Eno, thank you so much for being here. We got to go. So on the behalf of Eno Saris, my name is Nick Pollock. And we'll talk about the craft of pitching again.
Nick Pulak.
I had it. We'll talk about the craft of pitching again next week.